couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies, Madam Web, the Oscar-nominated shorts, Watcher in the Woods, and a special Valentine's Day or Valentine's Week treat. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Marvels, which is now on 4K and physical media. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The weekend before, Argyle did not do well. It kind of flattened at the box office. It ended up repeating this week with winning the box office with just over $6 million because Lisa Frankenstein cratered completely with $3.7 million for the whole weekend. That is not good. It was a very weak week at the box office. It was also the Super Bowl weekend, so a lot of people were focused on that. So, it's not going to be hard to beat either of those this weekend with any of the new releases. One of which is that new Bob Marley movie. I haven't seen it. I'm not reviewing it this one. I think it's called One Love. But I'm hearing good things about it. I'm not huge into biopics or musical biopics, but if you are, sounds like that is a good bet for you this week. Now, the other piece of news I want to talk about, I was going to talk about this last week. Gina Carano is suing Disney in what I consider one of the silliest lawsuits I've ever seen, just in what she's asking for and why she's doing it. She is suing Disney for wrongful termination and discrimination, sexual discrimination, because she was let go from all of Star Wars based on her statement she had on social media. We all remember this story. She would post stuff that was, like, at one point she posted pronouns were bleep, bloop, blop, or something like that, which is, you know, mimicking and making fun of people choosing pronouns. And Disney kind of brought her in and said, hey, look, you're representing us whenever you do this. And I've never seen a Disney contract, but from what I understand and what I would believe 100% is anyone who signs a Disney contract has to agree to a certain level of behavioral standards. You can't do certain things. You can't make derogatory comments to anybody one way or the other. You're not supposed to be overtly ridiculing in your position because you are oftentimes the face of Disney. And so she had that, and there were several instances. The thing that ended up was the final event is she claimed her views, being in the conservative side, that she was likening her treatment to the Jews in Germany during the buildup to the Holocaust. That, oh, you better watch out because everyone thinks it's okay until they come for you. And look, okay, let's just take the politics out of it. Just in general, don't compare yourself to the Jews in the Holocaust. That never ends well. Don't compare that. Because whatever you're doing and complaining about, look, if you're able to complain about it, you are certainly not being treated like the Jews in the Holocaust. If you are able to complain about it and not be murdered, you are not being treated like that. So let's just put a moratorium on that comparison for anything, regardless of what it's about. But here's the thing. Disney has a right to let actors go. There's no contract of signing them up and guaranteeing work. And she was she's on a show called Star Wars. With wars in the title, characters get killed all the time. Now, if you listen to the dialogue throughout The Mandalorian, they kind of just wrote her out and said, oh, she went over this way. They didn't kill her. I think they're thinking they might recast him. I wouldn't be surprised. But she's like in her suit, she's demanding to be recast or rehired in the role because apparently I think they were planning on a series with her. But I think what happened was she had these missteps before, and the Disney leadership and the Lucasfilm leadership came to her and was like, hey, you can't do that. You either have to apologize. You can't keep making these inflammatory comments. And she's like, I don't care. Free speech. Bleep, bleep, bleep. You know, and that's what gets you fired. And she's claiming, and she's like, and her damages, I think it's like $75,000 because it's like three episodes, what she would have been paid for three episodes. The damages, the money damages are actually really small. She's asking for punitive damages, but who knows? But the other thing is she's saying sexual discrimination because Pedro Pascal has made inflammatory things about certain figures on the right. And she's like, well, you didn't go after him. Also, arguably, Pedro Pascal is much more important to The Mandalorian than Gina Carano is. She's a side character. The show's named after his character. And granted, he doesn't do a lot of the on-set work anymore because he's got so many other projects, but he still does the voice. This is just amazing. And then to top it off, the cherry on top of all this is Elon Musk is funding the lawsuit. He's basically paying for the lawyers to do this because, and he's like, oh, look, I've told people if you get fired for what you say on my social media network, which I refuse to call it what he calls it, I'm calling it Twitter for the rest of my life. If you get fired because of what you say on that, I will fund your lawsuit. Raise your hand if you've been fired and had Elon Musk come up and fund your lawsuit. I guarantee you there's only one person out there who can raise their hand, and that is Gina Carano. And he's doing it 100% for the publicity. But look, it's Disney, for crying out loud. Disney has really good lawyers and really smart lawyers and very deep pockets. And they are not going to let some upstart who just shoots her mouth off too much, for whatever reason, put them over the barrel and bring her back. This is the dumbest lawsuit. This is going to end up going nowhere. It's either going to get dismissed or they're just going to rule against her. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is from the Super Bowl. There are a couple of these Super Bowl trailers I want to hit. The first one is Deadpool 3, or Marvel's Deadpool 3 with Wolverine, or something like that. Comes to theaters July 26th.
Wait. You are special. This is your chance. Be a hero among heroes. I smell what you're stepping in, Sensei. Your little cinematic universe is about to change forever. I'm the Messiah. I am Marvel Jesus.
It's funny, there's been a mixed reaction. Even though this is one of the most popular trailers, in fact, I think it broke the record for the most downloads of any trailer. But I know there's a lot of film fans, like film nerds of my friends that are looking askance to it because they don't like the director. And I don't know. This looks funny. I think any Deadpool movie is going to have a lot of Ryan Reynolds' influence on it, especially with the character of Deadpool. I am all in. I'm very much looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a hoot. The next trailer I want to hit really quickly is Wicked, which came from the Super Bowl as well, which hits theaters on November 27th.
The best way to bring folks together. Something has changed within me. Is to give them a real good enemy.
You're green.
I am.
Something is not the same.
Something just takes over me. And when it does, things happen.
Once you learn to harness your emotions, the sky's the limit.
What I find fascinating about this movie is they're going the Mean Girls route. There's no sense that this is a musical. You do realize this is a musical. It's based on a musical. Yeah, it's based on Wizard of Oz, but it's based on a musical that's based on a Wizard of Oz. Yet they're still not telegraphing that it's a musical. And they think, oh, it worked with Mean Girls. Yeah, because Mean Girls existed as just a regular movie beforehand. Who out there doesn't know Wicked is a musical? But somehow they're hiding that fact. So we'll see. I'm just real curious. It seems like they're a little bit nervous about showing stuff in this. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the Oscar-nominated short films.
back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about one of my favorite things that happens during award season, and that is the Oscar-nominated short films. I have always made a point to talk about the short films that are nominated for the Oscar, because here's the thing. Let me just talk about short films just in general. I love short films. I love the medium of short films. I think it is an underutilized medium. Every year, Netflix seems to get involved, and they have a couple short films that show up. I wish Netflix would, and the other streaming services would foster more of just individual short films. You know, stuff that could be as short as 5 minutes. It could be as long as 20 or 30 or 40. Now that we have the streaming services, why do we have to structure ourselves to just features that are an hour and a half or more, or series? What's wrong with a short film? I love short films because of the economy of time that is used to get a point across. A lot of them are one or two scenes, basically. I find it's a great way to sample a culture or a style. Now, the 2024 short films are available in theaters now. What they do is they break it up into three different blocks. They have live action films, animated films, and documentaries. Now, the documentaries are a real labor of love. People think that anyone who works in film and Hollywood is rich. They're not. There's a handful of people that are rich. There's that very teeny tiny sliver. Most everybody else is just trying to eke out a living. And documentarians don't make a lot of money. Unless your name's like Dinesh D'Souza or Michael Moore, you're not making a whole lot of money doing documentaries. And short documentaries are even more so because there's less of a market for them. There's at least markets for feature documentaries, less for short documentaries. I don't get a chance to cover very many documentaries, so I didn't get a chance to cover these. But these do deserve an audience out there. Go see it. I think it's 2 hours and 40 minutes. There's a whole bunch of, from multiple cultures. There's one from Taiwan. There's a couple from the USA. One of them is like the last repair shop, getting a lot of buzz. It's about this shop in Los Angeles that will repair musical instruments for kids in school. I mean, these kind of things. There's one called the ABCs of Book Burning, which looks and examines at the issue of banning books, which is been showing up definitely a lot in the news lately. So if you get a chance, go check those out, especially if you like documentaries. Again, I think it's about 2 hours and 20 minutes is the running time, and you can get it in theaters. Eventually, all of the shorts are going to be on shorts.tv, but before that, you can catch them in the movie theater. When it comes to the live-action ones, the problem with the live-action ones is, as good as they are, they're all very heavy stories. They're all very weighty subject material, dealing with everything. I mean, there's suicide and murder and grief and abortion, and there's a lot of these issues. And, I mean, I said the A word. That's one of the stories. You know, don't get triggered on that. Again, the live action shorts, I think it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long. But there's one from French Canada about a kid who's incarcerated. It's called Invincible. There's one from Denmark, which is about this guy who is visiting the morgue to identify his wife who had passed away and finding some unlikely kinship with somebody else there. There's the one, like I said, there's one about abortion, which is, and it's not just, it's not a, look, it deals with the issue, but I think it deals with a real situation. Coming from Ohio, even though it takes place in Arkansas, coming from Ohio, this is absolutely a relevant story. Whatever you think about abortion, it's worth at least examining this film. There's another one called The After. It's actually available on Netflix. It stars David Oyelowo. And it's a great acting performance by him. It's a tough story to watch, but it's very well done. It's done in the UK. And then there's another one. I actually talked about it a while back. This one's like the more lighter version. It's The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, stars Benedict Cumberbatch in Wes Anderson's adaptation of a Roald Dahl story about a guy who's using ancient techniques to cheat at cards and then become benevolent with it. And it's, again, it's, I just love Wes Anderson, and I love Roald Dahl, and I think it's
a beautiful little story. And there's also a couple other ones. And I talked about those a couple months ago. I remember talking to one of the reps from Netflix, and I was like, I really loved Henry Sugar. I wish you would have promoted the other stuff more. And that's the big thing is I wish, because Netflix is happy to put them on there. It's just promote them. Put a channel, do shorts. Shorts channel would be great. And then one of my favorite categories ever is animation. Animation is amazing. Now, the block of animation is shorter. It's about 80 minutes. And the reason for that is because there are, some of these are very short. There's five of them, each of the five nominated films. And then there's two more that are dropped in there as sort of like highly recommended, sort of runners up. One's directed by John Musker, who directed a whole bunch of Disney movies called I'm Hip, about a cat. And there's another one called Wild Summon from the UK, which is a fantasy version of the life of the Alaskan salmon. But in terms of the ones that are nominated for the Oscar, there's one called Letter to a Pig, and it's about a Holocaust survivor. There's one called 95 Senses, which is a look at all the different senses that a person has from a very unique perspective. And I mean, these are not animated like Disney cartoons necessarily. They're animated in a very mature, sometimes very rustic way. It's very artistic. The artistry behind it is quite beautiful. And 95 Senses, I think, certainly shows that. There's one called Our Uniform, which describes and examines, it's from Iran, but it examines the use of a Iranian girl's uniform when she's in school. And not about the headscarf issue as being good or bad, but the mandating of the headscarf and the uniform is how she approaches, which I think is a very good way of looking at it, not being judgmental about it, but more being judgmental about the lack of freedom. There's another one called Pachyderm, which comes from France, and this one's a tough one. This has some dark elements to it. And then finally, there's one that's really interesting called War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. And it's in sort of this alternate World War I reality where these soldiers on either side of no man's land are playing chess using a pigeon going back and forth. And it looks at the human side and the national side of a war in that battlefield and what it means and how you interact with your own soldiers and the enemy soldiers and when enemies stop being enemies. It's a very interesting look. It's a little bit naive and artistic in a John and Yoko sort of way, but it's still quite well done and beautifully animated. So ultimately, these are all great movies, even the ones that I didn't particularly like. I mean, they're powerful stories and innovative presentations that spotlight the thought-provoking power of the short film medium. I love watching them every year, and I'm glad I had a chance to see them this year. They totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Madam Web and a special Valentine's Day treat. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the regular movie reviews outside of the short films. And the big movie of the week, like I said, I think one of the big movies is also going to be that One Love Bob Marley movie. I did not get a chance to see it. Anyways, let's just get into this. There's a lot I got to say about it. In Madam Web, an ambulance driver discovers she has precognitive spider powers. That's a real thing. Spiders have ESP, don't they? And uses them to try to save the lives of three teenage girls.
I've been having visions. I knew he was gonna die. I think I'm seeing the future.
This is an emergency. Get off the train.
That man's trying to kill you.
What?
Who are you?
What is going on?
I can see the future. I've seen that man before.
So who is he?
Ezekiel Sims. He was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
Marvel Entertainment, which started out as just a comic book company, licensed a bunch of different things out. They licensed, Sony got the Spider-Man properties. Fox got Fantastic Four and X-Men. Universal got the Hulk. Paramount got Captain America and Thor. It was all over the place. Well, when Disney finally bought Marvel, ever since then, it's been trying to consolidate all of these properties under its own banner. And they, of course, did that with Fox. Most recently, they finally got, they bought Fox, and so now they've got the X-Men and Fantastic Four, which is why this week we got the casting announcement for the Fantastic Four, and that's why we're going to be having Deadpool and Wolverine coming out under the Disney banner. But the one that they've never been able to get completely back under their control is Spider-Man, because Spider-Man is such a moneymaker. The last Spider-Man movie made $1 billion and more. Across the Spider-Verse is nominated for an Academy Award. It's a beautiful movie. Very, very well done. And so Sony wants to have its own superhero group. They want to have their own Avengers, but they really only have the rights to the Spider-Man characters. Now, Spider-Man has a whole bunch of characters and villains and side characters, just like any of the major heroes does. That's how they did the Venom movies. It doesn't have Spider-Man in it, but it's a Spider-Man character. And that's how we ended up with Morbius last year, because Morbius is a Spider-Man character. And they've been trying to do this Sinister Six movie with like the Rhino and the Vulture and all those characters. So Madame Web is a character from the comics. And so they've decided to do this, and we're going to get Kraven the Hunter later on. So this has nothing to do with Spider-Man. But it's a Spider-Man movie. But they got Marvel all over it. They're really trying to glom onto the Marvel juju. But first of all, the movie takes place in 2003. And it feels like it was made back then. You know, back in the days of Ben Affleck's Daredevil and Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider. That's when stuff was a little goofier. That was before comic book movies changed. Comic book movies used to be kind of gee whiz and pulpy and really terrible dialogue and goofy things going on. But it wasn't until it really kind of changed at 2008. It's when you had Iron Man and The Dark Knight come out in the same summer and really show you could do some adult level stuff. And then of course the Avengers really kind of took off and comic book movies evolved. And I've always felt that these Sony things that they do, I think Venom feels very much like it was made in the early 2000s. Maybe the effects are a little bit better, but Madame Web, it's all over the place. Like, I mean, first of all, like the whole idea that she's not bitten by a radioactive spider. Her mother is doing research in the Amazon, and while she's giving birth to her in the Amazon, is bitten by the spider that has special powers that give people these abilities. Apparently, precognition's one of them. Like I said, I didn't realize that spiders could look in the future and see murderers. I mean, I've stepped on enough spiders in my life to know they didn't have that much precognition. But that's just the silliness of this movie. It's ridiculous. And look, Dakota Johnson, I like Dakota Johnson. I think she's funny. I think she knows when she's in some garbage, but she's just, hey, I'm collecting a paycheck. And she kind of gives this look to the screen, and it's just kind of this wink and a nod of going, I'm getting paid more than you will. She looks like she's ready to crack up at any moment because the dialogue is so bad, but she keeps her composure, and I love that she can pull that off for a whole movie. And she was the same way in the 50 Shades of Grey stuff. She actually did something with that garbage, and whatever she has been given for Madame Web, she does something with, although she's just not given much. It's a kind of an incomprehensible plot. It has one of the worst villains ever. I've heard it said, and it's absolutely true, a movie's only as good as its villain. That's why Star Wars is so good, because Darth Vader and the Emperor, they're great villains. But this guy's not. He doesn't come across as threatening, even though he's this murderous guy who dresses up as Spider-Man, basically. I don't know why he does. Again, it's just like, I don't understand why there's so much connection to Spider-Man and nobody mentions Spider-Man. I think they're trying to say it's a different, maybe they're playing with the multiverse. I don't know. And the dialogue's bad. And some of the other characters are bad. I mean, Adam Scott's in it, and Adam Scott just looks like he's happy to have a job in a big movie. You know, he's like, I'm no longer just doing crappy TV. This movie, it's bad. It is objectively bad. I don't know. I mean, It's not the worst thing. I'm hearing people go, this is the worst movie ever. This is the worst comic book movie ever. No, it is not. I've seen much worse films. I've seen much worse films this year. And it's February. So, you know, can dial back. But it's not a good movie. I'm still going to have to say that Madam Web kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. This week was Valentine's Day on Wednesday. Isn't that sweet? Valentine's Day. And so for Valentine's Day, I thought I'd talk about a movie about true love and about finding the right person and one of those power couples that will be remembered throughout cinema. Yes, I am talking about Sharknado. With Ian Ziering and Tara Reid, an aging surfer, a bar waitress, and a dim-witted blonde with too much plastic surgery try to flee Los Angeles when a freak weather event starts dropping sharks from the sky.
Hurricane David is poised to be the first hurricane.
It's a storm. That's what's driven them all up north.
I've never seen so many up north so bold.
It's barely even raining.
It's flooding here, and not the plumbing, the ocean. You need to go home.
I'm not going anywhere.
Storm's coming and it's coming fast.
Just can't sit back and watch this.
Tornado's heading towards the airport. We need to destroy it before it gets to the... Watch out!
You can't just wait here and wait sharks to rain down on us.
I'll admit, I never saw this one when it came out in like 2013, like almost more than 10 years ago. I saw three. I didn't even see two. I don't like bad movies that are intentionally bad. I love train wreck movies. I love movies where they work like crazy to make a great movie and they just fail. That's one of the reasons why I love Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space. It's not a good movie at all, but he put his heart and soul into that thing. And same thing with The Room. The Room, there were sacrifice on sacrifice on sacrifice to get The Room made. And it is just objectively terrible. Birdemic, I just felt Birdemic was incompetently made. And it's fun to watch like Riff Trax do it. And that's how I ended up watching Sharknado. I listened to Riff Trax live. But Birdemic is just objectively poorly made. And it's fun to make fun of. But also Miami Connection is another great example of the classic terrible movie that they really, really put their heart and soul into. Anyways, Sharknado, you know, this is obviously ridiculous and stupid, but you know, it still manages to sometimes be a mind-blowing, rollicking good time. I mean, look, the uniqueness of Sharknado is they actually did kind of take that one seriously. It's just, it's very low budget. And I mean, they have stuff where they're driving around and it's raining and then it's not. And the weather, they don't even put up silks around them to adjust the light exposure. And there's scenes where they're doing something and carnage is happening in front of the camera. And you can see just people in the background going about their day. By the time they get to Sharknado 2 through 6, I don't know. How many did they do? They did like 5 or 6. By the time they get to the other ones, then everyone's in on the joke. And it's just more, you know, a cavalcade of B-list, C-list, and D-list and below cameos. Sharknado's fun, but I can only take so much of it. So I will say it kind of rocks. I had more fun watching it than Madam Web.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Watcher in the Woods and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the Marvels. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up on Fat Guys at the Movies and talk about an old movie. This is a vintage one, and I've always wanted to see it. There was this time in the development of the Walt Disney Company, in the late 70s, early 80s, they hadn't quite leaned into and got the Disney Channel going yet, and most of their stuff was like on Wonderful World of Disney, but they had a lot of feature work that they did. The world was very different in the 70s. You didn't have cable the way you do now. Certainly not like streaming is now. They were experimenting with doing not adult stuff. Because they started doing that like later 80s where they broke out Touchstone Pictures and started doing R-rated movies. But the Walt Disney Company was toying around with what I think they considered sort of young adult Jew fiction. It was still stuff you would, it would be something like if you went to the library, into the children's department, there's the kids' books, the picture books, and then like the Encyclopedia Brown and that kind of stuff. I know I'm really dating myself with that. But then they have like Jew fiction, which are full regular novels that are written, but they're written for teenagers. One of the more recent ones, and I say recent in quotes, that Alex Rider's Stormbreaker series. That one, they made a couple movies. They made a movie of it that they never released properly, and then they did a series of that, I think, on IMDb TV, which is freebie now. And or Percy Jackson's another one that which they got the Disney series on that. But they kind of wanted to go for, they didn't want to do little kids stuff anymore. They were trying to do some more, I guess you can say more, not grown-up stuff, but not so much kids stuff. And so they toyed around with some darker elements, some horror, because horror is very popular among teens. Now, they're not doing like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or anything, but they had done like The Black Hole, which I'll probably talk about that because I revisited that. I love that movie. The Black Hole is a science fiction movie, and it's got these weird little Disney elements for kids, but it's got some very adult elements in it too. Or a couple years later, they did Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is an adaptation of a Ray Bradbury story. And it's about kids, but it's very dark and actually quite scary. And The Watcher in the Woods was one of those movies where they're toying around with it. And they said, even though it said Walt Disney Company Presents, it's not necessarily a kid's film. And I remember seeing ads for the Watcher in the Woods, and I so wanted to see it. And I think it was one of those that it was released. It didn't get a good response, and they pulled it, and then they released it later. I never got around to see it. I remember seeing Something Wicked This Way Comes at one of those 24-hour marathons I used to go to. And that's a really great movie. At some point, I might revisit that. But in The Watcher in the Woods, a family moves into an old mansion in the woods, and the teenage daughter discovers a haunting presence.
Something happened in these woods. Something that has never been explained. And it's happening again. Now.
Did you hurt yourself?
The past pursues the present like a recurring dream. What began as a game ended when a young girl vanished.
What do you think happened to Karen?
I think she's still out there.
There is some wobbly stuff in here. The writing's a little off. I've never read the original book. It's based on a book. And as I understand it, they had to make some changes. And then I think they made the ending of the movie and it didn't test well. And then they had to do reshoots. And there's several different versions of the way the movie ends. But it's ultimately a haunted house type movie. It's directed by John Huff. He's a British director. He has done other horror movies leading into this. And it feels like one of those gothic British horror movies. Like one of the movies he did was The Legend of Hell House in the 70s. And he did American Gothic in the 80s. And The Legend of Hell House was like The Haunting, you know, the Shirley Jackson story, because it plays with a very similar name. But it's about a group of people who come to this haunted mansion and have to discover Roddy McDowell's in it. It's actually not a bad little movie. I mean, I did enjoy it. And he was known for doing suspense movies. I mean, later on, he did Escape from Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain, which are two great Disney movies that are also, I mean, those are a little more right on brand as being a kids movie. But The Watcher in the Woods felt more teen. And Lynn Holly Johnson, who most people would recognize, she was in Ice Castles with Robbie Benson. She played the older sister. And Kyle Richards, who's in that awful Real Housewives or whatever, and she was in Halloween. She plays the younger daughter in this because she was young at the time. But you got Bette Davis as the woman who lives on the property as well, who sort of tells them, you know, we got to worry about this, and she gives the warnings. And it has that almost murky British 70s horror film look. And it does is a little simplistic, and it's really not terrifying, but it's creepy. And I wish Disney had done more of this. These didn't do terribly well, and so they stopped doing them very quickly. And then you had the Disney Channel that moved on. Now Disney is kind of dipping their toes into that with some of the stuff they produce on Disney Plus. But it's nice to kind of go back and check this out. I think you can rent for like, you know, like $3 or $4 or something like that. It's you can find the original. I think they did
special release Blu-rays a couple years ago. So you can certainly get it on physical media, and I think you can stream it. But it's quite good. It's quite fun, and it's atmospheric. And like I said, it's a little simplistic, but you know, gosh, for Disney kind of stretching out and trying to do some interesting stuff, it was cool. I mean, a little disjointed, but it's still a strong entry into the young adult horror genre that Disney was playing with in the early 80s. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on The Marvels, which is available now on physical media. You can get it on 4K, DVD, Blu-ray. It's been on Disney Plus for a while. After a cosmic event, Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau, and Kamala Khan discover their powers have become entangled.
Hi.
We're looking for Kamala Khan.
Period!
Okay, so our powers are entangled.
I can manipulate light energy. And you,
I could totally show you.
No!
Not again!
Hi.
Where's our daughter?
Wherever you were.
We're a team.
Oh, no, we're not a team.
We're not a team.
Here's the thing. I'm a defender of the Marvels because I thought it was a fun movie. The bottom line is, was it entertaining? And it was. What I find so funny about movie fans is they love to just get mad at the same things. And they get mad at stuff that they weren't mad at before. They're like, why does this movie require me to watch other movies? Like, when has a Marvel movie not been like that? If you watched The Avengers and you hadn't seen the two Iron Man movies and Thor and Captain America and the Incredible Hulk, you would have been like, what's going on? So I think there's just people who want to get mad at stuff. And that's part of the problem with the world today. And that's part of the problem with online and outrage cultures. There are people who just be like, why do I have to watch other movies to watch a movie? You don't need to. If you don't understand what's going on, just accept it's in another movie and it's explained somewhere else. Because that's the thing. People like, I don't know if I watch a movie. And they start watching. It didn't make sense to me. And it's like, because you didn't watch the other movies. Fine. You don't have to watch Ms. Marvel on Disney Plus to understand what's going on the Marvels. Just when they present this girl who has these powers, just accept that there's this character who has these powers. That's the whole point of setting up characters in other movies. So it's a relatively simple story, but here's the thing. It deals with characters that not everybody's terribly familiar with. I think Captain Marvel was, and it was an anomaly of a film. It came out between Infinity War and Endgame. So it certainly benefited from that. But after that, you really don't have much characterization of Captain Marvel. She had one movie. And Monica Rambeau is just a relatively, I mean, she's important, but she's a minor character in WandaVision. Most people forget that's what she's from. And Ms. Marvel, as good as the story was and as good as the movie was, you're then asking somebody to pin a movie on a TV series that may not share the same audience. But I think ultimately the big problem was they spent $260 million on the movie. That may be the problem. If they had spent $100 million on this movie, it may not have made a ton of cash, but at least it wouldn't have been considered a cosmic bomb. But honestly, I thought this was a fun little movie. It's goofy and it's silly. Yeah, what's wrong with that? That's the other thing. Is there are people like, I don't want my comic books to be silly. Listen to what you just said. Comic is the first word in comic book movie. It's pulpy. It's silly. I mean, not like Madam Web, which it has dialogue that's written like Stan Lee wrote in the panels. I thought The Marvels was a lot of fun. I thought it dealt with some cool things. I thought the characters balanced everybody out. I really enjoyed it. I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. I got to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Drive Away Dolls and Ordinary Angels. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.